Welcome to 30K Radio. So this is a new Warhammer Horus Heresy podcast, and I'm your new host, Richard. So I wanted to do a show that kind of coalesced between Horus Heresy and Warhammer that would show somewhat the hobbyist what to look forward to, what to do, how to begin the hobby, and what exactly it means to be in the Warhammer universe, especially in that of the Horus Heresy. So as far as the introduction goes, I actually come from a small town in Slovakia called Trestena. No one actually really knows, but yeah, I know. By the way, I've lived like 10 years in the States and like all of these places, and I'm not going to get into that because it's like one of the most difficult questions people ask me is like, where are you from? But yet it bothers me still. So as far as my hobbying past, I started somewhat in 2003, I believe, or 2004, when I saw the miniature of a good friend of mine, and I was like, damn, that looks cool. So I figured out, why not join? And I remember the first purchase that I made was a Cadian Kasserkin squad of like the stormtroopers, whatnot. And I ended up returning them and not opening it up because I found out that my other friend was selling a Grey Knights army. So I figured I'd go with that. So in the end, I ended up buying the Grey Knights army, and it was one of those armies that they were still made in like the old clamshell blister packs. And they were washed and cleansed of color about like 100 times, and I still never got them to perfection, and I don't even know where half of them ended up being, and half of them are broken up, and etc., etc. So afterwards, I started collecting, and mainly I stayed in the hobby of 40K and just stayed with the general Warhammer and only with Games Workshop and not any other company. For some reason, their product and their fluff mainly. The fluff kept me in. I had to travel for the better part of my life around the world, so I actually never had really access to the hobbying community except for that was made available via the internet. So the fluff really made it live for me. So I started by reading, obviously, some Black Library books and things of that sort. And then I got more deeply embedded into Space Marine, I guess, culture and what it means to be a Space Marine, the philosophy really behind it. So afterwards, I moved to another place and another place, and I've collected pretty much every army on their portfolio except for the Nids, which I was never, or the Orcs, I was never really a fond of the Greenskins or the Bugs, to be honest. And afterwards, it was like Khorne, then Forge World, then some Grey Knights, then some Dark Eldar, yada, yada, yada. Later, I figured out that I'm not capable of actually painting a full army, and I figured that I need to decrease my own painting standard. So that puts me in the timeline about 2 years back when I started collecting the first of the Forge World models, and actually even before that was some Grey Knights, but nonetheless. I started collecting Forge World models, and I decided to make Emperor's Children army. The reason probably was, this was like a year back when I read the Fulgrim book. It was, for me at least, incredible, especially after hearing the audio drama made by Black Library, whoever was the subsidiary that made it. So yeah, that puts me into today's timeline. The reason why I wanted to start the show was, first of all, I'm a huge fan of both Games Workshop, even given all its controversy and all the problems and issues and all the rants that we hear around the globe of people whining about GW this, GW that, I really didn't care. But I figured that a podcast in the name of the Horus Heresy and of the great thing that Forge World has given to us, the hobbyists, would prove to be a boon to our hobbying society. Now, me as myself, I'm actually quite introvert, even though I'm creating a podcast, which is quite funny, you might laugh. I figure that the podcast would help broaden the community and kind of show and tell people what Horus Heresy actually means, what it stands to the community, how we as hobbyists enjoyed it, and what Forge World has done by releasing these books. So as far as introduction of my own past, I really don't want to get any more deeper into that, so that's about it. As far as the show and formatting of that, I figured that we would start with an introduction of whatever is going on, hobby progress, etc., then possibly a rant about new releases or whatever's coming out, some leaks, and then possibly some hobby tips, including from like painting to modeling to whatever assembly, whatever you would need. So as far as hobby progress, I've been recently painting. I'm actually really infatuated by my Emperor's Children and the calling for perfection, if I may. I've been painting Lucius, and I've done a kit bash, not really a conversion. It wouldn't really count because I simply took a Palatine Blade Squad and I attached a hat from a head from a Blood Angels of, I don't know what it was, like Sanguinary Guard or something like that. And I figured that it was pristine and had that look of arrogance inside. So I figured that would go well with Lucius. Plus it had actually hair, not just a bald head, you know, like all of the Space Marines. And I was painting him up. And then actually, long story short, I started painting a Spartan in December and actually just managed to finish it now in March. So yeah, it was a pain. Actually, not many people realize this, that when you order like a model is fine. Like a model is pretty much the same as fail cast, no offense. But I mean, you have to clean off, you have to wash it, you have to do all the little bits and bobs and whatever, fill in the bubbles with some green stuff. I'm actually quite lucky of not receiving too much miscasts. So I put together the Spartan, and by the way, a tank is something completely else. First of all, the complexity of assembly is much higher. The instructions of Forge World leave much to be desired in form of detailed specification and installation instruction. However, the tracks, this is my like biggest rant of today, is the tracks. You can't imagine how many times I took off the tracks and reassembled them and re-freaking sculpt them and put green stuff and not put green stuff, sand it off, not sand. It took me like 3 or 4 hours just to stick on the damn tracks. Now, I remember actually finishing just building the model, which beforehand was not a big issue for me because I was used to using plastic and everything, you know, just fits. So I actually managed to build the Spartan and yep, I finally painted it up. Got myself one of those, you know, good old airbrushes, Badger and whatever. And I actually was quite happy of the purchase. It was actually a gift from my wife. And yeah, it was something new. It was something I can clearly say that all hobbyists who don't possess the airbrush are making a huge mistake by that. So last weekend I actually finished both Lucius and the Spartan, and now I have a semi-decent army of the Emperor's Children, and I'm actually quite fond of them as far as the faction goes. And well, yeah, so that's it for my hobby progress. Now, if I get back to my introduction for a moment, I just wanted to say one thing, that I'm in a very bad position since I'm actually the only person speaking here. I'm trying to get my wife to actually come and join me because I motivated her to start building and painting her own army. But we'll see how that goes. And yes, so just keep the comments kind. Don't just bitch on me for whatever other reason. Just understand that I'm one person sitting in a chair talking to a microphone looking at a screen. Now think how funny that is. So yeah, getting back to the show format. So as I said, introduction, some possibly hobby progress, new releases. So let's get to new releases. So for this month, as of 40K new releases, we have White Dwarf issue 9, or 7, yep. 7, the Chaos Space Marine Hellbrood, and obviously the Knights. Now the Imperial Knights, getting back into the subject of including D-weapons into the game, I don't really want to get into that because I've had no experience whatsoever playing in a tournament scene, so I'm actually the last person to tell you guys how to play, what to do, whatever. I collect and I paint simply for the fluff and the occasional game that I might play, you know, once every odd full moon. So as far as the Hellbrute, it's a multi-part plastic kit that actually seems very decent. It has all the little bits and bobs. However, I'm not really fond of the new chaos aesthetic from like a designer's perspective of what chaos space marines used to be back in the day and what it is nowadays with these biomechanical demon whatever the you call it. And well, yeah, we also have the limited edition Crimson Slaughter, a codex supplement. Now, what I think about that, I'm not even bothering because I really don't care, honestly. And what I do care about is that the Horus Heresy Visions of Heresy, that was usually a limited edition back in like November or October-ish, I believe, is finally available to the mass public in form of, I believe, paperback or hardback, but not in the beautiful leather-bound whatever cover. Also, the Horus Heresy Scars and the Horus Heresy Scars Unabridged audiobook has become available. Now, getting back to the Knight model itself, I have to say that it's a beautiful model. All of the whole hobby community pretty much agrees that it's one of the best models GW has ever like put out in the recent history, at least. For me, it seems that like comparing it to a Lord of Throne or Lord of Skulls or whatever he's called from Khorne, I think you should just use him as a proxy to that of Khorne and throw away, destroy, delete whatever the other model because it looks like crap. I'll be honest, it looks like crap. So, what's next? Also, the Crimson Slaughter Codex supplement. Getting back into supplements, well, I actually purchased the Black Legion supplement, and even though many people had issues with the Black Legion supplement, I purchased it. And the fluff was nice. I mean, it's nice to read about all of these little stories of how Abaddon gained his Drachnian power sword and all of these items. It's nice to read it. However, some of the graphics, because there's like one picture of the Chaos Space Marine, how he's first affected by Slaanesh, Nurgle, Tzeentch, and all of the other Chaos gods. And you can simply see that it's a Photoshop picture with like just few items added to Tzeentch it up or Nurgle it up, if you will. Now, as far as like paying $50 or whatever the MSRP is for the actual book, I don't know if I feel good with that. However, the rules section at least allows me to take a few extra things. However, I'm not a fan of the whole supplement idea towards the game. But then again, I'm the last person you would ask since I don't know anything about 6th edition. And another short story about, 2 years back, I went to, just when 6th edition was released and when all the chaos happened, I went to a tournament with my Grey Knights army, which I was painting during 5th edition. And when I actually finished them, it was just changed to 6th edition. So all of a sudden, everything changed. And pretty much as far as a battle report goes, one of the games, my army looked like this. Five-man Paladin squad, or whatever, Grey Knight squad. I think it was a Paladin squad, because there was Drago, and then a five Grey Knight strike squad, Storm Raven, and Dread Knight, plus I believe there was a Librarian. It was a completely, you know, poor army list, because I just had the miniatures that I had, and they were pretty much buffed up with gear, and I spent like 1,500 points on that. But long story short, I started playing against an army of orcs, which counted above 120 models at that, or 100 or whatever. And I remember this pinnacle moment, this like climactic point of the game, when my Stormraven finally deploys. And I'm so happy that it deployed, and the Terminator squad, Drago's inside, happy, cheering that he's going to finally be able to put his sword to the skin of the orcs, etc., etc. But then next turn, you know how orcs, they only hit on 5+. It bothers me so much that he was capable of penetrating and destroying the Storm Raven and making, so first of all, I think it was like strength 10 AP 1 hit to the actual squad that was inside. So pretty much everybody died except for Drago. Now, when you roll the scatter dice for a destroyed vehicle, It's scattered directly on my Grey Knight strike squad. So that one turn, it destroyed my whole army. And I remember like screaming at the tournament organizer, what the frick? Because I was wondering what the hell was going on. Because like all of a sudden, the whole of my army, except for like a two wound Drago plus a Dread Knight or whatever he's called, remained. So yeah, that's as far as that goes. Now, as far as the introduction, you know my name, you know what I do, you know I'm actually recording right now in Poland, of all the places, in Warsaw. So just for FYI. So yeah, I hope you enjoyed the introduction section of the podcast, 30K Radio, and I'm heading to a break. All right, listeners, so I'm back with the part of the Horus Heresy. So, before I begin with explaining, because obviously all of you advanced hobbyists, please don't be angry with me because I'm trying to explain, you know, what it is, the Horus Heresy. So, basically, the Emperor of Man, I'm going to put a shorter version because obviously the vast majority that has a demand for a Horus Heresy podcast knows what exactly Horus Heresy is. So a slight recap. The Emperor reunites Terra, sets out to conquer the galaxy, and all of a sudden he has all of his 20 sons that were obviously scattered, and they reunite, and they get their respective legions to command, and from all of the legions, obviously, you have the 20 sons, or 18 sons, whichever way you look at it, Primarchs, and their superhuman beings, even compared to that of a Space Marine. Horus, Leman Russ, Ferris Manus, Fulgrim, Vulcan, Rogel Dorn, Rabut Guliman, Magnus the Red, Sanguinius, Lionel Johnson, Perturabo, Mortarion, Lorgar, Jagatai Khan, Conrad Kurz, Angron, Corvus Corax, and Alpharius Omegon, which is another controversy which I will not get into. However, what I will get into is the Horus Heresy. Now, again, please be conscious of the fact that I have never done podcasting nor been on any sort of radio show, whatnot, so please don't be too critical of whatever I'm saying. Now, to begin with the Horus Heresy, you have, again, spoiler alert for all of those listeners who possibly haven't read, Horus Rising and all of those. It's a controversy because Horus Lupercal, the Primarch of, at the time, the Luna Wolves, sets out for conquest. Then at some point at the Triumph of Ulanor, I believe it was, that he gets his legion renamed as the Sons of Horus. Now afterwards, there's a controversy where he gets wounded. The Chaos Gods save him and help him out. Then he's, thanks to our beloved, not Lorgar, but I think it was Erebos, he switches sides and decides to join the dark forces of chaos. Now, the issue I have with that, or actually no issue, that's actually where the Horus Heresy begins. So we're talking around the 30th millennium, or, you know, after obviously some years past. I'm actually, you know, not a big aficionado or connoisseur of the facts of the Horus Heresy. I'm more interested in the motifs and symbolism that it portrays to us as hobbyists and as people who try to portray their armies to live in sort of symbiosis and tandem with whatever they're creating. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, we as hobbyists, we purchase these models. We pay X amount of, be it pounds, dollars, Australian dollars, I know the prices are high, etc. We pay X amount of money, of liquid assets, in order to access and achieve and possess these miniatures through which we try to promote our own personal beliefs, arts, and etc. This is at least the vast majority, or this is possibly my own personal goal as to why I actually do Warhammer, or for that matter, Horus Heresy. Now, I got a bit off track, so I'm going back to the Horus Heresy part. So, where it all begins is the clash, and Horace switches sides, and basically this begins in Istvan 3. Now, for all of you listeners who are interested in getting into the Horus Heresy, the first purchase you must do, be it with friends, you know, bunch up, never pay for shipping. This is like my number one thing. Never pay for shipping with Forge World because the prices are high. I mean, there's ways to evade paying that whatever ridiculously high price it is. So you and a bunch of your friends, you know, gather up, make a big order, over 250 quid. I believe that's how the Brits say it. So get an order of about 250 quid and order yourselves the Horus Heresy Book 1, which is called Betrayal. Now, this part of the podcast will mainly concentrate on the Book 1, Betrayal, and this would be like a skimming over or review of what the book represents. So first of all, I will give you off the top of my head the rating that I would give to the book on a scale of 1 to 10, definitely 10. I'm a person of pleasure, and I really relish and enjoy when a product is well executed, and when you can feel it in your hand, you can feel a polished, well-refined material and the book itself that possesses, you know, various aspects of you know, contact, either it be visual, touch, sense, etc. So when you look at the book itself, first of all, it's, I don't know if it's faux leather or if it's real actual leather. I don't know. I don't care. It looks beautiful and stunning. It's like one of those, you know, Victorian age. It's like if you would get a first copy of first out of Voltaire's writings, you feel like you're holding something that is not abundant, which makes you feel that you're in a separate market of your own. So you feel like a premium customer. You feel like you're buying a Bugatti Veyron, if I may, of hobby products. It comes, it's beautiful. It has these like metal inlays or edges or corners, whatever you know, it's beautiful. It's, I mean, everybody's seen the pictures by now. You all know how the Horus Heresy Book 1 looks like with the cover images of a Reaver Titan and, you know, a Dreadnought. So, getting back to the book. Value for your money, definitely high. I mean, I can only recommend this book because I have read many books from GW, and this really surpasses my expectations as towards a simple, you know, if in the beginning I thought it, you know, it's going to be a simple rule book. So as far as the fit and finish, you know, the paper silver lined, obviously paint. I'm not talking about, you know, sterling silver, whatever they call it. So, when you receive the book is about, let me just check, 289 pages. So what the book covers is actually a vast amount. Obviously, you have many, many pieces of artwork. And the thing with the artwork is that it's not repeated artwork, and it's not like the color plates that, you know, you used to have with some of the previous Forge World books where you would have like the Death Core of Krieg, you know, and this color and that color. And you can obviously see that it's photoshopped or not photoshopped or it's copy-paste, etc. All of the artwork, at least from my eye, that I've observed in the book is original and singular for that matter. And yeah, so the first thing when you open, you have, I guess, a map of all of the galaxy, where, you know, where this all is taking place. Obviously, at the center, you have Holy Terra. Afterwards, when you turn, you have the Horus Heresy, Book 1, Betrayal by Alan Bly. Yes, I know. By the way, guys, if you're going to listen to this podcast, be ready, because I like to imitate when I'm reading whatever Games Workshop puts out. I like to pretend that I have a pseudo British accent, which, you know, completely clashes with everything, but, you know, just stay put with me. So obviously when you open to page 4, you have the credits, acknowledgements, content, and this is where it all begins. So it starts with, on page really of 38, the death of Istvan 3. Now, again, huge spoiler alert for all of those people who are willing to purchase this book but have not yet received or heard any information about this. I don't want to be the person who's like, here is what the stats are, here is what the history is. Please just turn off this podcast. It's crap anyways. and listen to something else, because you are going to regret the fact that I'm telling you this right now. Again, I'm getting off track, but like today I saw the leaked picture of Horace Lupercal, and it ruined my day. I mean, I was waiting for him for such a long time to, you know, be released officially with all of the glory, if I may. And all I've seen is like some, you know, sketchy forum that had like a picture of him. I mean, yeah, sure, it's nice to see him before, but do I regret actually having, you know, succumbed to my initial reaction of actually clicking on the link? Yeah, I kind of do, because now it kind of ruins the whole big effect of receiving that newsletter that ForgeWorld puts out. And yeah, it ruins the whole effect. So again, spoiler alert. So the first part of the book is called The Death of Istvan III. Part 1, treachery. Part 2, ruin. Part 3, extermination. So obviously in the treachery part, if you've read any of the Horus Heresy novels, which I can again assume that at this time you have, it takes place on Istvan III, and it is the turning of the sides. Then afterwards, we have the Space Marine Legions, the Sons of Horus, World Eaters, the Emperor's Children, the Death Guard. Afterwards, we have the Legio Mortis. Afterwards, again, another section, if you will, is called the Death of Istvan III campaign. Now, since I don't play, I really don't care, because I just don't have any clue whatsoever about 6th edition rules. Whatever the rules are, I build an army, again, to show to myself that I'm capable of actually painting and modeling. Afterwards, we have the Age of Darkness battles. Then we have the rules section, which is the Space Marine Crusade Legion army list, which includes the Space Marine Legion warlord traits, headquarters, elites, troops, etc., yada, yada. Then we have the Space Marine Crusade Legion appendix, which is your specific chapter or legion traits for whichever legion you have chosen. And last but not least, the Mechanicum army list appendix. So let's get to a subsection of all of the legions. One moment, please. I know, I'm unprofessional because I haven't included any sticky notes in the book, but like I literally decided today that I'm going to start a podcast, so bear with me. By the way, the child in the background is my son. My wife is currently taking care of it, so if you're wondering if I'm, you know, being molesting or whatever, I'm not. Just don't worry. Almost there. The Space Marine Legions. So let's begin with the Sons of Horus. So obviously, I don't know why I keep using that word too often. So their numeration is the 16th Legion, Primogenitor, or in other words, Primarch, Horus, a.k.a. Horus Lupercal. Cognomen, the Lunawolves. Observed strategic tendencies, shock assault, harrowing actions, and strategic decapitation strikes. Noteworthy domains, Chthonia, Saranax, resource tithe rights on 37 other primary worlds. Allegiance, Traitor Maximus. So in the part of the Sons of Horus, you obviously get a part of their fluff, how, you know, in the beginning it was so difficult for them on Chthonia, how there were like gang tribes, whatever, whatever. Obviously we'll read this. I'm a big fan of their fluff, of their feeling, especially that of all of the characters that are included, obviously, Horus, Abaddon, and I keep forgetting his name. Well, someone on the forum or on my website can remind me. Oh, by the way, I opened a website just today. It's called 30kradio.com, obviously www.30kradio.com. So you can, I mean, there's currently nothing on there, but at some point I wish to include some pictures. And the podcast, you will be able to get a link to iTunes. I mean, I started this today, and I don't even know what RSS is. I'm not, you know, I'm not retarded or anything. I'm in the finance industry, but like, I still don't know what RSS is. Again, I don't have a clue. So just bear with me. If I'll be able to send to you a link towards like the iTunes, whatever you call it, store page, storefront, whatever, iTunes store, then just subscribe to the podcast there. So, getting back to the Sons of Horus, you obviously have unit formation structure within the Legion, and you have the various templates, MK3, MK4, MK2, Maximus pattern, and you have many color schemes, one that I actually was very fond of because I'm a big fan of the black and gold, and red, actually. So there's one unknown Sons of Horus Legion chieftain of the Catulan Reaver Company. I keep mixing, by the way. And he's adorned with black armor with golden inlays and etc. Now you have the original color scheme of the Luna Wolves, which was black edging, really. Then we have some, again, pictures, some fluff. And the World Eaters, one of my favorite legions again. It is the 12th Legion, Primogenitor, Angron the Conqueror, Cognomen, the Warhounds, which was prior, obviously, to the World Eaters. Again, I'm using obviously. Observe strategic tendencies, shock assault, planet kill, exterminatus operations, close quarters action, space hulk purgation, I'm not sure, boarding operations, linebreaker attacks, forlorn hope, objective assaults, noteworthy domains, Bodda, muster world, Sarum, temporary fortress station, recruitment rights of several feral worlds, and the segmenta solar and ultima. And they're obviously traitoris perdita. Or trattoris perdita, I don't know. It's pseudo-Latin, by the way. I checked many things and it actually doesn't add up. So again, in the beginning you have the fluff section. Origins is called The Necessary Evil. Lord of the Red Sands, which is basically a retold story of Spartacus and the Primarch of Wrath, which again continues such a story. And I'm not going to get into detail because even if you've read it, you have the book, it's still a pleasure to read it by yourself. So I don't want to really get into that. Unit and formation structure within the Legion. And when we get into the section with the pictures or color plate, I'm sorry if I'm using the wrong terminology, we have the striking white and blue armor. Now, my personal input with this color scheme is that it's not the fact that it's painfully difficult, but you know when you're, for example, you have the arm is white with golden details, that's fine. But then you have the inner armor that's movable or stretchable or what have you. Now that part is black. And I swear that every single time I have such a large contrast, I will go out of line somewhere and I'll make a mistake. And it will bother me the whole time. And then when I'm correcting, putting black on white, I'll end up putting the white on black. And not to say that my skill is so bad, I simply am selective with choosing what to paint given my adequate level of painting. Next on, we have all of the color schemes. Again, there's a nice black, all black, covered, smeared in red, gory blood. By the way, salute. Nothing like a glass of bourbon before doing a podcast, obviously. There's always a section of exemplary battles of showing the prowess, if you know what I mean, of a given army, of how they like to ascertain or show off or promote their tactic. And a nice picture of Angron. Voila, the Emperor's Children. Numeration, the 3rd Legion. Primogenitor, Fulgrim. Cognomen, none. Observe strategic tendencies. Combine arms, warfare, the use of complex maneuver and discursive tactical planning. Asymmetrical assault. Noteworthy domains, Chemos, primary, Terra, tertiary rights, allegiance, traitors, perdita. Now, I don't want to sound unequal by spending more time with the Emperor's Children than I did with the World Eaters or with the Sons of Horus. It's simply that this is the Legion that motivated me to get into the Horus Heresy after reading Fulgrim, so I duly apologize for that. The reason why I succumbed to this is because it shows a legion that was held so high to the esteem that it was one of the favorite chapters or legions of the Emperor, and yet they have fallen so low, and this gap, this is so tragic that for some reason it got to my heart, and I figured, you know what, this is the Legion that I want to do. And it was for that matter that I figured, screw painting purple, I'll manage it somehow. Sorry, I'm getting slurry. Yeah. By the way, I'm slightly alcoholic. Just for all of you wondering, you know, I'm slurry or anything, that's why. In the Emperor's Children section, it pretty much shows you why they have the Emperor's, symbol, emblem, what have you, the Palatine Aquila, and shows the planet location, unit formation and structure within the Legion. And actually, you know, in this book, I was quite underwhelmed because I somewhat expected them to have, a larger covering of, pictures. I mean, the pictures are fine, but, there was no artwork of Fulgrim or whatnot, so I was kind of disappointed in that way. Obviously, I'm supposed to not use the F word for some reason. I don't know why. It was, rating or something. We have the color plate, or whatever, the pictures. And again, it shows the Emperor's children in their full glory in the purple gold armor. And I became quite fond of it, because in the beginning I was wondering, I was quite, skeptical when it came to painting purple. It just didn't match well for me, because I was used to painting like Templars and Grey Knights and all of these armies that use these pseudo-manly colors that, you associate well with one gender or the other. And I simply didn't believe that it would work. Yet after doing a test model of, I painted Angron, and you know how on the base there's the two Space Marines that have one, I think one has the arm cut off, and I test painted purple on that, and actually I was surprised that it didn't look as half bad as I thought it would. So yeah, I stuck to that. So yeah, the Emperor's Children, exemplary battles, beautiful dreadnought of the Emperor's Children, and yes, the Death Guard. Numeration, the 14th Legion, Mortarion the Reaper, the Primarch, Cognomen, the Dusk Raiders, observe strategic tendencies, heavy infantry assault, attritional warfare, hazard death zone warfare, Xenos eradication and purgation operations, noteworthy domains, Barbarous and Allegiance Traitorous Perdita. Now, again, same with the Death Guard, you get an introduction, and you get some, pictures, and I'm actually not going to get into this one, even though I'm a huge fan of the Death Guard. When I read the fluff regarding Mortarion, I was quite surprised, I never expected it, and I'm quite fond, especially with all the model releases by Forge World that have happened, in the recent weeks. So, you have the pictures, which are, again, stunning and original, some Spartans, and afterwards you have the campaign. I'm going to skip the campaign section because, as I've said, I don't know a squat about running a campaign. I barely know the rules, and I'm actually not going to go into the rules, but I'm going to refer to what they write on the forum, saying that it's a completely different game than regular 40K because you try to spam some units more than you do others. In other words, you want to take a Legion tactical squad, at least 15 men, and they have no special weapons. It's more of a large scale game. I mean, I've played 2-3 games of Horus Heresy, and I have to say, you really need the numbers. I mean, you can invest heavily into a Primarch, but at the end of the day, you want the numbers, and it's more of imagining an actual battlefield. And I actually prefer this because it's less of the special weapons. Therefore, you have this less of a clash of, one weapon taking out a whole squad. I'm not going to get into D weapons because obviously that would be another completely different topic, but excluding D weapons and Titans, I can clearly say that it's quite balanced, because you're playing Space Marine against Space Marine. There's nothing, unbalanced that you could really do. I mean, you can, I guess, spam certain units that the other player wouldn't, but it's certainly not the imbalance that I've heard recently, between Hell Turkey or whatever you call it, and, you know, like the Eldar Wave Serpent, and some of these units that simply should not be allowed to be taken in such vast numbers. In some sort, you know, it should be controlled in a way. I mean, GW went out loud and said it by themselves that they're not a tournament-oriented company, that their game is not supposed to be that way. It's simply a question of enjoying the flop. Then why would you let a person... I mean, I know from a designer's perspective that you can't simply think about, oh, someone's going to take this wave serpent and take like five of them and, you know, spam it out and make people cry. But honestly, the customer base is so large. I mean, we're talking about a huge market share of like so many clients and potential clients and actual current customers that they could take the time to take a team, like devote especially a 5-person team that would just proofread and if I'm or like game test all of the rules and see if they're capable of spamming something out of its proportion. And just do something like that. I'm just talking basic quality control. I mean, I'm not asking you to spend like another month in development and R&D and whatever. I'm just saying test out. If you let a person to take three, if you write it to have it possible to be able to use 3 Wraith Knights, then test it out. See what happens to the game. Assess the situation and not just, you know, throw out a codex then that people grab, and you have one person on the one hand, which is like me, a poor, you know, average Joe who just wants to enjoy the fluff of his army. And then you have this other, you know, I don't want to swear, but like other guy who wants to exploit the codex to its max and just spam it out. So then me, I don't have pleasure because I'm losing and I'm like devastated by loss because I can't lose worth crap. And then you have the other person who is devastated because it was not a challenge to him. I mean, what challenge is it at 1,000 points or 1,250, whatever, to put out 3 Wraith Knights and, like, spam Wave Serpents with Dire Avengers, etc.? I mean, it's not a challenge against a regular Space Marine army. Getting back to the book. I'm sorry, when I off track again. So, you have the HQ section, the troop section, the elite section. Everything is pretty much in accordance. I mean, your Terminator squads, the a Legion Terminator squad may take up to one Terminator costs 30 points, which is not bad. And there's certain differences, but in general, what you want to do is get the book before. Because if you choose a Legion, which you probably will, at some point you want to decide what Legion you're going to pick, and to that Legion you want to complement your army and the fluff and theme that it represents, e.g. you wouldn't want to take a heavy support squad with your World Eaters because it simply doesn't make any sense. They would much rather bash in a skull of someone with the barrel of the bolter and heavy bolter and just run off. But the whole point being is that some of these units, you don't see how effective they are until you actually read the book. Now, it's not my goal to show you what is effective, what is not, because it's really subjective. However, what I really want to stress is that start with, if you're getting into the hobby, start with your HQ. If you have a Primarch, your Primarch. Get 30 tactical Marines, paint them up, and during that time when you have the book, decide what you want, what, you know, works with the fluff, what goes hand in hand, what's in tandem, and then figure out slowly and slowly build upon that list. So that's about that. And just don't rush the purchase, because then you'll end up with a bunch of stuff that you will never use. Or like, for example, I've done that to a certain extent where I purchase like all the Primarchs that have released, and if I think about all of the models that I could have simply had by not purchasing all of the, you know, Horus Heresy Characters editions, it's kind of, you know, it's kind of makes me sad. I could have had my army much, much more bigger. So, then let's get back again to the book. We have the elite section, Legion Rapier, Weapons Battery, Legion Assault Squad, Legion Tactical Squad, Legion Breacher Siege Squad, which I've never used or never seen, Legion Tactical Support Squad, Legion Rhino, Legion Reconnaissance Squad, Legion Seeker Squad, Legion Outrider. I'm not going to read anymore. This is, again, in Fast Attack. Heavy support, I recommend the Spartan because I'm a big fan. Artillery Tank Squadrons, Legion Spartan, which is what I just said. And then we have the Thunderhawk, Transporter, Gunship, Legion Malkadora, the Legion Cerberus. And I believe there should be a Titanicus section, special section. Ah, this is the Crusade Army List Appendix 1, the Sons of Horus. So this is what really changes the theme and the feeling of your army. It's basically the special rules. It's like a supplement, whatever, to your existing legion. So for example, the Sons of Horus have Bitter Pride. Units with a special rule cannot benefit from the world trait of allied character of an or of an allied independent character's leadership score. So they have all these, you know, specific traits and squads, which, I mean, just Terran Terminator squads you have. This is Horus the Warmaster. This is the part where you would find the special characters for your legion. Garvia Loken, which I have forgotten his name again. And then you have this for basically all of the legions. Now, the whole point of me reading this is to kind of motivate everybody. Simply pick an army based on what you've read, what you've heard, and then do not simply, you know, use the... I mean, I'm the hobby guy. I really don't care, but if you care about the rules, just still get the beautiful units. I mean, for all of these legions, we have the chapter-specific units, which are simply stunning. You know, I mean, I can go on and on for how the Phoenix Guard and the Palatine Blades and the Cacophony are one of the most beautiful units I've seen in Warhammer to date. Or, you know, Mortarian is not yet out, but like Typhon and the Death Guard Terminators, Grave Wardens, they're simply beautiful. They're beautiful models. Now, if I was building an army, I wouldn't see one reason why not, even excluding, even if they were like, you know, crap on the battlefield, I would still get them as part of my theme in order to create myself the whole thematic playing field for my Horus Heresy. So yeah, that's about it for the book. I mean, you have the Titanicus section, and this is not very different from what it was back in the old days. I mean, the rules, except for the hull points. I think they're all... because they used to be structure points, now they're hull points, which you all know since I suck at rules. So yeah, this was the pretty much intro into the Horus Heresy. And actually, you know, a succinct book review. I mean, I can't really say I went into debt or that I actually told you everything. I just wanted to say like the few highlights for me. That was like the build quality, the writing quality, the feel quality to it. And I have to say I was quite surprised. I mean, I didn't expect the book to be as it is, yet it was. So yeah, that's that from our review section of any books, and now I have to go for a break. Take care. Actually, because I forgot in the previous sections to cover the new releases from Forge World. The main thing you can look up online is obviously Karn the Bloody and Typhon. At least these are the things that catch my eye. There were many things added to the portfolio of the Mechanicum. The Mechanicum Talax cohort with Multi Melta. Then you had the Mechanicum Myrmidon Secutors, whatever. I'm not a big fan of the Mechanicum. I just find when I was reading many of the books that they're kind of, Well, I just have a lack of words to describe my personal feeling and affection towards them. I simply am apathetic towards them. I don't care. However many of you care, so that's why I'm saying. what is out. So that's as far as new releases goes from Forge World. I mean, we're going to have a huge splash pretty soon, I believe. And so let's get on to modeling and painting. Now, where to begin? I was actually listening to a video on YouTube of, I think he's called Atom Smasher. He has a channel called The Tabletop Minions, which I'm very fond of, which I lack right now. He has the professionalism to actually edit those videos till perfection. How I feel watching those videos is more of a movie experience rather than a shaky camera. And I'm a big fan of his. I don't know if I'm subscribed because I don't even have a Facebook, for crying out loud. I'm just going to make a Facebook for this, you know, station. But he showed online a water palette. And I've been painting for 10 years, and there is nothing in my painting repertoire that has changed my life so much as a palette. Now, a wet palette, what essentially it is, you get a tray. Essentially what I used was, obviously, you know, the GW sand and flock, you know, plastic boxes. I had a few of them empty, so I put paper towel and then a specific waxy baking paper that lets moisture through. So when you put a droplet of paint, it doesn't dry. I mean, you have a cover and it simply doesn't dry. I left a drop of paint because I was painting for a while, once for a month, and it still like didn't dry out. So incredible, great tip. Again, you can visit Atom Smasher at Tabletop Minions on YouTube. I believe he has a Twitter and Facebook, which again, I don't know because I don't use. And yeah, so this was like a painting revolution. It's incredible because your paint doesn't dry out. It's constantly moist. Your layers are thin because remember, painters, all you want to do is keep your layers thin and moist because then the surface is smooth. And what you want to achieve is that smoothness because when you have, I mean, with specific legions, and I'm not going to offend such legions, a rough armor is possibly good. But I'm talking about the Emperor's Children, where they have all this, you know, like, bling, or whatever you call it, where they have to be shiny and clean. Oh, that rhymed. So yeah, with those, you want to keep a clean look. So what you want to do is get yourself one of those tubs from Games Workshop, or any other, you know, like, I forgot the American brands because I haven't been there, but like, you know, the food trays that you can close. Put a piece of paper towel, a few drops of water until it's moist but not drowning in water. Then on that, cut out a shape, exact shape of the bottom of the plastic tray. Afterwards, you can apply paint there and it will never dry. So you don't even have to mix pretty much the paint with water if you mix your paint well. Now, here's the next thing. The GW painting pots are crap. I mean, they just dry out. So what you gotta do is go on eBay, Allegro, I mean, Aukro, whichever, you know, eBay auction site you use, and get yourself paint droppers. What I do is I empty out the whole paint into the paint dropper. Afterwards, I drop in a piece of Forge World, you know, like flash, of the large pieces of flash that comes. I just drop that right in. And then afterwards, I pour in water into the GW pot. I shake it thoroughly, and then I put that back into the paint. What happens is, first of all, the small piece of resin mixes the paint up very well, and then it gives you consistent application. So when you put a drop onto the actual palette, you can it's consistent and it's well mixed, first of all. And second of all, the fact that I mix water into the GW paint pots makes it that it's already diluted. Now at first, it might be a difference because you have to do more layers, but then again, your color or scheme is going to look much more smooth than it did before. So, huge recommendation for all of you, even experienced hobbyists who don't even know what a wet palette is or known and have, you know, fretted the change to it. Go ahead, change. It's not a huge investment. It's more of an investment in time and getting adjusted. go ahead and use. So that would be it for the modeling. Then I guess, another thing. I've never learned or heard, but I painted this dreadnought, venerable or whatever it's called, from the Horus Heresy, Emperor's Children. And after I applied the purity seal. Now what happened was I received this like white film and I pretty much cried and I lost my vibe to paint for like 2 months because I was so depressed that this miniature that I've spent like hours painting, I've simply completely destroyed. It bothered me so much. But then I went to my local GW shop. Actually, there is one in Warsaw, and I'm still surprised there is. And they told me that I can apply a secondary coat of the purity seal that will actually make the white stuff disappear. And yay, it actually happened. So there is a possibility to save the white coat, film, snow, whatever, off of your miniature once you have applied it. So, fellow listeners and hobbyists, remember, keep your brush wet. And make sure you shake the can before you apply the purity seal. Okay, so that pretty much covers our modeling and painting section. And yeah, well, thank you for listening. So this is pretty much the show. Obviously, in the future, I want to include other people, guests on the show, possibly my wife, possibly some of my friends, and I really would appreciate, because I will include my private email on the website, or you can just write to 30kradio at, I believe I'll create the address, gmail.com, and write me all of your critique. I really need this, because this is a startup show, and I really want to hear some concise, well-written information regarding the show about what you don't like, what you like, what I could change, what I could add to this, because I'm really starting off, and whatever you guys tell me, I really am open to democracy, so I will put out what wants to be heard and where there is a demand. So again, thank you very much if you actually stay till the end of the show, and I really appreciate that you will hypothetically support this show in the future. And I wish you a pleasant evening. It was a pleasure. This is Richard and 30K Radio. Bye-bye.